Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 97.
Oh, so close.
Featuring our great guest, a good friend of all of ours. Melissa, you know him dearly.
I do. I feel like he's a very close friend, but he knows everybody as well.
So he's like a close friend to everybody.
Yes.
Yes, and who is his name?
Ian Fales.
Ian Fales, who is a wonderful, wonderful person. He worked at FX Guides for years and years and years, and still a good friend of theirs, but recently left to become an independent freelance journalist. Mm-hmm. And he's doing a lot of great articles at Cartoon Brew and other things. And I've wanted to have him on the podcast for a long time, but he was like, oh, what would I say? I don't know what I would say. And he's being shy. He's like, what are you talking about? You're like a major voice of the industry and you have something Absolutely. Important to say, right?
Yeah.
So I decided that I had a conversation with him about like, what does it take for people to notice you writing things down or putting things up on the internet? What does it take to get noticed on the internet?
Yeah, because it's a big place.
It is a big place. And Sean, you know specifically, right? So like you see things that happen. Like it's always a thing that always surprises. It's like I write this amazing article and it gets a few likes, but I put an image up and it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So tell us about that. Like what are some of the weird things that you've noticed on the internet?
Babies and animals.
Babies. Yeah, cat videos get a lot of it.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of, like, you know, some in-depth articles don't necessarily get as much attention right. as a picture, right?
Right. We're a very visual company, so
sure.
we get more response through imagery than we do with...
Well, it's also an international company, so people are not necessarily going to read the English part, right?
Well, yeah.
So
I hope they do.
Well, if they can. But the thing is, I think that's the point.
I work so hard on it.
You know... but you do. But it's an interesting thing. And so Ian and I actually talk about it a lot. Like, what does it take? And what is a thing in a video that gets people's attention? How long to make a video?
Clickbait.
We talk about clickbait.
You need title, like very
actually,
engaging titles.
We talk about clickbait for like 20 minutes uh-huh. on this podcast.
Oh,
yeah. It's about like, you know, top 20 things to make your podcast be more listened to.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. yeah, those are. That's yeah.
You need some shock value in your title for this podcast.
Yep. So that actually speaking of the podcast, it's been going really, really well. Very, very excited about it. Like recently the numbers have grown.
Thank
so
you.
So all the new listeners out there who are listening, thank you so much for listening, and hopefully you guys will have a good chance to check back on the other 96 episodes that we've posted so far, and we have some really great ones coming up.
And stay tuned for the big 100.
The big 100 coming up, for sure. I want to do a big thing, because like I talked to Ian over at THU, which was over in Portugal, and for those who are new listeners, that is Trojan Horse Was a Unicorn, which is an amazing conference over in Portugal. I know it's a silly name, but that's the whole point. It's one of the most creative conferences that I attend every year now, and I love it dearly. And they, if you haven't attended it or you want to know more about it, they've actually posted all of their talks up on THU TV, which is very easy to find. Just go to Google and look up THU TV, or if you want to just know, the direct link is trojan-unicorn.com/TV. And it's really basically like a Netflix of all the talks that happened there, and they're unbelievably high value production, really great talks. And the kicker is, if you guys want to buy this year's THU, which is actually a really good deal, you can get it at a 20% discount. And all you need to do is enter the promo code CG Garage, all one word, CG Garage, and you guys will get 20% discount. So please check it out and let us know what you think. I'd love to hear your feedback on on THU TV. And let us know. And of course, let us know what you think of the podcast itself. A lot of you guys are new listeners. And so please let us know what you guys think about it. Sean will let me know everything that's going on.
Everything.
Right? Everything. All right. And a special shout out, late birthday to Melissa.
Oh, guys.
Melissa. Yeah, we kind of missed her birthday last week. And so we decided to celebrate today with some delicious cake and some and have a great time.
It's never too late for cake and rosé.
You had two birthdays.
I'll have another one next week.
That's right. What's called Thanksgiving.
I'll put a candle in the turkey. It'll be fine.
There you go.
No one will know.
All right. Thanks so much, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the chaos group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
So what are we talking about?
Well, I've wanted to do one with you for a long time, and you're very shy. It's like, now what would I talk about? I'm not that special. I don't, but you are very important.
I'm not special.
You are special. You have something that's very unique, is that you know how to take those stories that people do and turn them into something that people want to look at, right? So it's really hard. This is the thought I had when I was thinking about it, that you could do. We had this conversation about what gets noticed on the internet and how to get things noticed. And that's a very challenging thing.
Yeah.
And I figured maybe we could discuss that because just the example we were talking about the other day where, you know, on Facebook, you can have an incredibly important article and you post it on Facebook and it gets a few likes. Or you can place just one cool image and it gets hundreds of likes.
Sure.
So why is that? Mm. What's the attention span thing?
Yep.
So awesome. let's talk about that because we're already recording.
I thought you were being sneaky like that.
Yeah. So what do you think? What do you think causes that?
What do I think causes that?
Yeah.
I think my first thought is attention spans.
Sure.
Because I do it, but man, if you catch a train or a bus or when a plane lands and everyone's allowed to turn their phones back on, if you watch what people are doing now on their phones, it is fascinating. They are scrolling.
Right.
And I'm saying I do that too. So it doesn't come as a surprise. Mm-hmm. But people are scrolling through their Facebook feeds, their Twitter feeds, their Snapchat feeds faster than I've ever noticed before. And it's as if they're just looking for the coolest thing they can find because they know there's a lot of noise out there, right? And so most of it probably comes from their friends.
Right.
But I think it's moved on from the scrolling through their Twitter feed, their Facebook feed, to also scrolling through a news website.
Right.
You know, or Facebook is the good example because it's usually a combination of your friends' photos, your friends' postings, and news sites. Mm-hmm. Sorry, news articles.
Right.
So they don't want to look at anything deep and lengthy because they've got 10 minutes on the bus or 20 minutes or 5 seconds to feel like they're catching up.
Right.
You know, maybe I am translating my own practices on that, but that's an observation I've made recently doing a bit of traveling is how quickly people are trying to absorb a lot. So that's why the things that get their attention are the things they click on and look at.
Right. And if it takes just 5 minutes or, you know, 5 seconds to look at an image as opposed to 5 minutes to read an article, they'll look at the image instead.
Absolutely. And, you know, you could say video is the same.
Right.
That 3 minutes is too long.
Right. You know, yeah. You know? Yeah.
Someone else made the observation the other day that so many of these videos now that are in your Facebook feed or just anywhere are captioned, you know, in a fun way because sometimes you're looking at these videos with no sound on.
Right.
So you're not even almost watching the video. You're reading the text.
Right.
You know, it's to me, that's such a weird development, but it's actually clever by the content creators to make sure you look at it and briefly get it.
Because if it's just a video going with no sound, you don't have any context and you just scroll through, right?
Yeah, exactly. And part of it also is that fear of missing out, FOMO stuff.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is I often get emails or you know, notes from friends. Have you seen this video? Have you blah, 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 blah.
Right, right, right.
And I actually think people have seen glimpses of these videos, these viral videos.
Right.
And they say, yes, oh, I've seen that. But they haven't watched the whole thing.
Right.
You know? I mean, again, I'm probably just saying things that I do.
Right.
But it's so curious as someone who's now writing a lot of content and producing stuff and have been doing that for a little while.
Right.
Because it sometimes, you know, that's part of how I now write. I try and pick one cool thing to talk about or
right.
one cool thing to make a video about or showcase an image for.
Right.
You know.
So it's clickability or click-throughness, right?
Yeah.
So you want to say, oh, you know, and sometimes I find it's interesting, you know, just looking at the titles of some of the talks that we've had at THU, yeah. the way that they pick their titles, some of them are like, I know the talk, I've been to the talk, it's like that title did not give that justice. I would have been more like pressed to go see this if they had the right word, because that's all I'm doing. I'm looking at the schedule, it goes, oh, that cool. That looks like an interesting talk, right?
Yeah.
So titles are extremely important too, right?
Titles are so important. At THU or any of these events, though, I think the organizers are conscious mm-hmm. that too much detail means you'll actually go past it.
Okay.
And so if there is a clever title.
Right.
That's a little bit sneaky or, you know.
Right.
Yeah, sneaky is a good word, I think.
Yeah.
Because, it's, you know, what we're really talking about is throwing back to old school newspaper journalism headlines, aren't
right.
we?
Yeah.
That we're all about catching your eye to make you read four columns of words.
Right.
And why isn't that the same approach that people are making in making you look for a particular talk to go to or an article to read on, you know, a blog or whatever?
Okay, but just to counter a little bit the idea that people don't have time, right? People don't have time, but yet every week people are listening to an hour-long podcast, you know, that I put out there. So somehow that works. And so I'm not sure exactly why it works or what it is, but...
You're absolutely right. I think what we're talking about when we say that people are listening to those things, though... is trust.
Okay.
I trust that your podcast mm-hmm. on CG Garage. No, I'm being serious.
Yeah.
Good because I'm interested in the subject matter. I'm like you.
Right.
I want to hear from the people you talk to because I feel by you curating them, I have a similar taste to you.
Sure.
And I'll like them. Other podcasts that I listen to, like entertainment ones, The Nerdist or right. WTF or right. whatever, you can, after a while, you can trust that it's going to be good because you know the person.
Right. And getting an audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not creating it. This podcast is for a returning audience, right?
I think so, yeah. And then every now and then you might hear from word of mouth, oh, you've got to listen to this Barack Obama, WTF, whatever, yeah, you know, yeah. whatever it is. That's right. Not a good example because people would listen to that. But,
right.
And that's where I find out about content, word of mouth, more mm-hmm. than any other way.
And that word of mouth is actually your Facebook feed a lot.
It is a social media word of mouth.
Yeah, but that's I think that's what's so important is because I've been trying to figure out, you know, what are the best ways to do that. It's interesting because I actually follow, obviously, my... you know, the stats on my podcast to see how things are going, what's going on, people are liking it, and then see how many downloads are coming every time. And it's a very normal pattern, which is great. It's very predictable. It comes in the morning. You know, I put it out on basically Sunday night in LA, which is designed to be available Monday morning in Europe, right? And so people have a Monday morning. And so every people consistently see that happening. And I see the exact same pattern. I see a big download on Monday and then it's a little bit less, a little bit less, a little bit less. And then the weekend, no one's listening to it. There's much fewer, which to me implies that people are listening to it at work or on their drive to work or whatever it is. That's where the people are getting it. But every now and then, suddenly I'm like, whoa, this podcast is like, you know, or it could happen in the middle of the week on a Wednesday, which normally happens. But all of a sudden it's like, three times more than it normally would have on that. And I was like, what the hell happened? And I usually track it. There was some guy on Facebook or something that said, hey, check this out, and it spreads. And then after that, which is interesting, is that it goes down, but then my overall numbers start to increase. And that means I've gained more of an audience.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's such a challenge, isn't it, if the idea is to increase readership or numbers.
Right.
Because you have a base set of readers and listeners, I think.
Right.
And you don't want to market too much because they're going to listen to you already, I think. I'm always conscious of sounding a bit advertorial in my tweets and Facebook notes about my own pieces.
Sure.
Because I feel like, well, the people who follow me might look at it anyway. I don't suppose they will, but I...
Yeah, but I think it's important to find the right way to put the message out there, right? I mean, if you did something new, I would have to make sure and go check it all the time. But I check my Facebook anyway, and so it'll pop up and Facebook is like, oh, great, he did something new. Yeah. So there's something about that that's important. And I guess social media is critical to clickability, right?
Well, it's almost the only way that things that I've written in the last couple of years have been put out there.
Right.
You know, and back to when you see a spike in the coverage. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just amazing when something gets on a bigger site or, you know, that... John Gruber's site, Daring Fireball.
Right.
You know, that's actually being called getting fireballed.
What does that mean?
If he reads something you've written and posts about it,
right,
he has such a huge audience that the traffic to your site often swamps your site.
Okay.
And it's, as I understand it, it's called being fireballed.
Okay.
You know, because it's just so intense traffic.
Right.
That it happens a lot too. People he links to or sites or articles he links to.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, that's just an example of, you know, normally it wouldn't link to an article you've written or something you've created.
Right.
But when it does, it's just the most amazing spike.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Well, it's funny how, you know, I think it was yesterday or maybe the day before, where someone was talking about how he has a problem in his relationship with, you know, whoever his partner is, and that they're both artists. And if he puts up an image and gets more likes than she does or whatever, she gets very upset or very angry and I guess jealous of the situation. And so that's kind of a weird thing. Like, you know, just the idea. It's like, why can't you just be happy with your work? It has to be recognized in some way. I think that's what I think is a little bit dangerous about it. It's like you're addicted to the likes, right?
Totally. I'm just going to admit it. You do, and you get a bit disappointed
right
when you're not getting them.
Right.
And then you sort of rationalize it a bit and you go, oh, well, you know, I'm not going to get it right every time.
Sure.
Or, you know, there could be reasons. Often, there are really obvious reasons, like there's a big football game on,
right,
or it's a long weekend in America,
right,
or the film sucks. I mean, that is just, sorry to take a side note, that is one of the hardest things in covering visual effects, is you tend to have to do the interviews a week before, a month before,
right,
and you just don't know whether the film's going to land. Sometimes you do,
right,
and you hope. And so that's often a reason for not having a huge success in the piece.
Right.
But even then, the art, I think, is picking something out of that work or the film or whatever it is you're talking about.
Sure.
And making that as interesting as possible. That's a bit of a diversion, but I totally agree that there's this obsession with likes and hits and sharing. Sharing is I've found from doing lots of freelance writing now, the amount of shares is what a lot of editors and publishers want to know about.
Yeah, because a like is just a like, and a share guarantees that a bigger audience is going to see it from there, and you're hoping that a share turns into a share from that share and goes on and on.
And there's a whole science of this and analytics and you know, SEO stuff that smarter people than me understand and take advantage of. And I think, no matter what I'm doing, I'm just always trying to write the best thing I can write and produce the best thing I can produce. And you know, the only thing I take away from it is when I'm pitching something to an editor, I think maybe I have an inkling whether they're going to say yes or no.
Right.
I have to pitch it anyway.
Yeah.
But you start getting that feel like, oh, they're just not going to go for this because I just don't think they're going to get as many shares as they want.
Right. You know? So what does cause more shares? What are the things, like what, give me an example of a story that you, like you just said, it's not going to get enough shares.
All right. Suicide Squad.
Okay.
I actually enjoyed the film.
Mm-hmm.
It did pretty well, ultimately, if you really analyze the box office of it, all sure. that sort of stuff. But when I was pitching articles for Suicide Squad,
yep.
the truth is I got a lot of editors saying no thanks because they'd had a month or two of preview stories on Suicide Squad
mm-hmm.
that hadn't done well. So they actually had measurable reasons to say no.
To predict.
Predict that even a visual effects story on Suicide Squad wasn't going to do so well.
Right.
Now, the visual effects were brilliant, I thought.
Sure.
Really, like, great. Like, and there were interesting things to talk about. Lots of, you know, techie stuff.
Sure.
But I was curious about the way that they use their previous hits on Suicide Squad related stories, you know, because there's a lot of down talk about DC and mm-hmm. and whatnot. Ultimately, I still did some great stuff on it, and actually, those pieces did fine.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, because the work was interesting.
Sure.
But I'm sort of now talking more about getting the story up in the first place.
Right.
On the other hand, a really successful piece in a not as necessarily successful film was something I did for Kubo and the Two Strings.
Okay,
yeah. Have you seen that? Leica's fantastic stop motion film.
No, I haven't seen the movie, but I know who it is. Yeah.
And well, I did a piece for Cartoon Brew, and all we focused on was this giant skeleton that Leica had built and stop motion animated.
Right.
And that was the angle. That was the, you know,
That was the difference.
There's so much great work in that film, and actually I covered it in different ways for other places as well.
Right.
But because we narrowed in on something really cool and almost crazy, like it was ridiculous that Leica would build a, I can't remember how tall it was, but 18-foot high stop motion model. And, you know, that they were going to use some Hollywood special effects motion bases to move it around, or they even tried a, you know, one of those car factory robots to move it around, which they didn't do. But so there was all this sort of cool factor
related
to the actual building. And I also think, you know, a lot of people still love stop motion and the handcraftedness of it. And so there's that factor in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so that article, as I understand, did really well. Now, the film hasn't landed at all.
Okay, but what is your prediction of why? Because let's talk about shares or clickability, or what do you think was the thing that made people click on it? What was the thing that made them stop in their feed to see that work? Because that's what I'm trying to figure out.
Sure. I think it was they couldn't believe we made it as if, and I still can't believe, Leica did it. So it was a disbelief that this thing even happened. So as a reader, if you're reading the headline, which I can't remember what that headline was,
right?
We tried to create that sense of as if Leica could get away with this type thing,
right?
They were crazy enough to do it,
okay?
And it wasn't made up; it was true. I still think that.
No, of course. Yeah. Well, and so. This is the thing I think what's weird is like, finding out how to get people to read your stuff or see your work is such a art, definitely not a science. Cause I don't, there's no way you're going to go, I'm going to write this article and I guarantee you it's going to get do really well because it.
Well, but I think. Well,
you think you can?
No, I don't think I can, but I think people do think they can.
Right.
If you go, by the way, I know exactly what you're getting at, but I'm there's a few places I've written for and just read, mm-hmm. especially movie sites. They really do tend to have that down to a bit of a science, and it's based on the search engine optimization side of things.
Sure.
If they're writing a general nondescript article about Batman, it's the key words of Christian Bale and Ben Affleck
right.
and that actor side that are the things that get their hits.
Right.
Literally, they're the tag words. Literally, they're in the URL. And
right.
they might not even be mentioned in the article.
Right.
And so that's a side of things I actually don't know I know enough about. I probably should know a bit more about it, but I'm confident that in those sorts of pieces, they can predict based on how well they,
right.
do those SEO things. Which doesn't sound very, it's not very interesting.
Well, I think it is because if you're going to be an individual or a company or a small company or whatever, and you want to get noticed, right? You have to know these things. You can't just say, I have a site on the internet and therefore I'm present. People have to go to that site and they have to have a reason. They have to do something interesting.
Yeah.
We talked about The Verge the other day, right?
Mm.
And about how I go to The Verge all the time, right?
Because
I have, it's a great site and I get good content. So I'm actually not necessarily, I'm going to be, it's like the podcast, right? I'm going to go there anyway. So that's, I'm a different case.
Yeah.
But what I've noticed in their articles is specifically what you said. It's like, this article has Samsung exploding phone
yeah.
or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
And the article does not necessarily give you anything new.
No.
It's no. sometimes even a short article, which actually sometimes people like. It's like, if they had like the science behind lithium batteries, that would be harder. And they made a really long format article. I mean, that's the thing, right? People don't do long format articles anymore.
No, and they now call those deep dives.
Right.
And they also are a deep dive if they're more than 1,000 words.
Right.
You know, up to whatever, 20,000 words, which I think is personally a really interesting thing because it is about tailoring to your audience who does have half an hour on the train to read a longer article if they want to.
Right.
On Saturday morning or something like that. But you're right. The Verge is a really interesting example of where I think they have a lot of short pieces,
mm-hmm.
many with interesting imagery that they know people will click on.
Right.
And others that are in between in a way. Like
sure.
They're not necessarily that interesting, but they fit into the Verge's mandate, which is tech, isn't it?
Right.
Or tech and culture.
Right.
You know? And I go there every day,
right?
Maybe twice a day.
Yep.
Because I know that it's going to be well written.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't.
It also looks nice.
It also looks nice, easy to read. Yeah. But there are other sites I go to where I think I barely even read the articles, but I just look at the headlines just to see if anything's come up, like
right.
in computer graphics, visual effects, filmmaking. You know, all these things I'm interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably won't even read the pieces, but the headlines almost tell me what's going on.
Right.
Which, the point I'm getting at is almost what we were saying. Sometimes those headlines aren't actually at all what the piece is about. They're just clickbaity.
Right.
You know.
Well, clickbait.
Yeah.
So what is clickbait? And the thing is, you know, I was going to write something in the blog post. I don't do enough writing, and this is something I'm going to have to struggle with because, you know, it's harder for me to write because I have my dyslexic thing. That's part of the reason why podcast has been helpful to me because I can still talk about all the interesting things and not struggle through the writing process. So I admire the ability that you have to just write out a full report of what happened at THU in like 35 minutes and put it up online.
Yeah, but I'm going to say that I write a lot, but man, I'm tired by the end of it and I miss out on things by
because you're writing.
Writing. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, but your point is
So there's something about, you know, at one point I was going to write this article and I said I was saying, "What would we do it?" And I forgot what it exactly was and Lon said, tell me six things that are important in here. And then you're going to start your article by saying six things about GPU rendering or something like that. And I said, I can't do that.
Oh, man.
You know, we rendered on the GPU and you're not going to believe what happened next. You know, those clickbait things, they frustrate me. And here's the other one that really upsets me. Mm. And people do this on Facebook all the time. It's the, 95% of the people fail this test, right? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And everyone succeeded who did the test. But you know why? Because it's really simple. And you know why it's really simple? Because they made you clickbait and now they have all your information.
Yeah.
Because those articles are designed to make sure that you get feed from them on the internet.
Yeah, I hate them. Yeah, I hate them.
They're terrible.
Yeah.
Please, if ever someone sends you a test of like, you're going to, you know, an impossible intelligence test with a stupid math equation that's solvable by a three-year-old, it's clickbait. It's there to get your information.
Yeah. You're right. I'm going to be the first person to be guilty of clickbaiting because... honestly, it's a way of getting people to read your pieces.
Sure, sure.
I've never written a, you know, you won't believe what happens next thing. And I, listicles, you know, lists, I've definitely done those. And they, weirdly enough, sometimes they give you a good structure to follow in an article. What I'm curious about is, are people really into it because of the list or because you've actually come up with interesting things?
Right.
I'm almost thinking in some ways it's the listicle. Who, like if you didn't make it as a list, if it was something else that's sort of like a list but not really, right. I think you'd still get people interested in it. But it's become a listicle because of the weirdest headlines, like 13 things you can brush your teeth with or what, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
If it was still a list, but the headline wasn't the list,
right?
I think people would still be interested in it as long as it's an interesting subject matter.
Yeah, but I think that people, you know, their eyes are darting around, right?
Yeah.
So they'll go through that list and then they'll stop on one of the list elements that seems interesting to them. So,
yeah,
it's I guess it's a method to get people to continue to read a long article or at least go further than just... because sometimes you get a really long article and you read the beginning part and you never get to the end.
No.
Where you may miss some really good information you were actually looking for. But if you make it a list, people go, what's the next thing? What's the next
thing? And I'm pretty sure there's software out there that publishers use to measure how far down the page people scroll.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, well, I'm 100% sure there is because I've seen it. But I don't know the results of those, but I'm pretty sure you're right. Yeah, most people read the first para and then, well, if it's crap or if it's not interesting, they're not going any further.
Sure.
But don't you think that just harks back to journalism from day dot? You know,
right, the headline and you read the first. But that's what's so important, right? So actually, you're a journalist. My dad was telling me when I was a kid about journalism because he worked in a newspaper for a while. That, you know, the headline is one thing, and then the first paragraph, you have to sort of give a summary of everything that you're about to talk about in some way, right? Mm. The who, what, when, why, where, or whatever, right?
That might have changed.
So, okay, why has that changed? What do you do in your first paragraph then?
I do try and do that,
mm-hmm.
but I'm conscious sometimes that that's a bit boring.
Right.
Right? Because it's like an essay. It's like what you would do at university.
Right.
So instead of that, and although I do that, occasionally instead I find the main fun point of the article.
Right.
And here's the thing. I'm writing about visual effects and animation. There usually is one fun thing.
Right.
Say, I recently published another piece on Cartoon Brew about Storks, the animated film that ImageWorks did.
Yeah.
Or did the animation for. And the coolest scene in that film is the wolf pack can transform into anything.
Sure.
So they need a bridge. So they make a bridge out of themselves. Right. Or they need a submarine. They make a submarine. I mean, it's ridiculous, right? But it's hilarious. And a bit like the skeleton piece for Kubo.
Right.
That was the article I wrote on storks, which is just focused on that. But even then, in the first para, you try and say why that's the fun thing to talk about.
Okay.
And the idea is you're trying to hook the reader, right?
Right.
That's my idea. not very scientific. There's probably a lot more scientific analysis of how to write to hook the reader.
Right.
The other thing about that in hooking the reader, I'm trying to hook myself.
Yep.
I'm trying to make it interesting for me to read it and to write it.
Right.
And so if I feel like I'm writing an essay, it takes me back to university right. days. I'm being serious. Like, I get a bit, I feel like it's a tough slog, so maybe it won't be the best thing I've ever written.
Right.
But if I'm making it fun to write, therefore I feel like I'm making it fun to read.
Okay.
Now, someone's going to read one of my articles and go, that was the most boring thing I've ever read.
Right.
Therefore, I've failed. You know, so it's going to be different for different readers right. as well. Was that the question? Yeah.
Okay, yeah, Carrot. Yeah, it yeah, is. Yeah. So, it is. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But okay. And so I like the idea. So in the first paragraph, write something that's really catchy or whatever. Because yeah. here's what I'm trying to get at, right? There's a lot of people out there, like I said, companies or individuals that have something that they want to get noticed, right?
Sure.
And so they're going to look at making whatever they're doing to make that happen. But the biggest, obviously the press is the ultimate. Like, right, you were talking about, what was the effect you were talking about when someone shared, the guy who shares something and it breaks your website?
Fireballing.
Yeah. Right. So, fireballing. So, but what some people are going to want is they're going to want to hear, they're going to want something like FX Guide or Cartoon Brew or whoever to pick up their information, right? So you guys scour the internet looking for new interesting articles to write about, and obviously your word of mouth of movies or things that are going on. But if some individual is going out there, what is it that you do? It's like, oh, I need to, like, what can that individual do to get the attention of something like what you do?
They need a hook as well.
Right.
And, you know, read a million press releases, and some of those PR companies or marketing people are actually really good
right.
at finding a hook. Sometimes the company they're working for or representing, you know, it just isn't as interesting as it can. Like, if you're representing a hardware company making disk drives,
right?
Amazing technology, you know, but it's hard to sort of make it interesting. How they tend to make it interesting in the filmmaking world is related to some project it's been used on.
Okay,
right? I'm talking about very practical things like the actual content.
Sure.
In terms of how you can get noticed, I think the actual truth of that is what relationship you've built up with right. the journalist.
Okay.
It's true. You can, just like I was saying, you can almost trust a publication or an author or a podcaster like right. yourself or the writers at FX Guide. You trust them to know the industry,
yeah.
right? That's why you go there.
Sure.
It's funny. I think you trust the marketing or PR reps to have bothered to send you something that they think you might be interested in.
Sure, sure.
And they do send out blanket things. And I really mean that because this sounds terrible, but some things that I receive, I don't even look at them.
Right.
Whereas if they're from someone I've built up a relationship with, I'll spend the time.
So, okay. That's a good point. I'm going to get back to that. But I want to, before I lose track of this, you mentioned press releases.
Yeah.
Okay. We do press releases and it gets sure. noticed and picked up, which is great. But if you read the press release and then you go to like the four sites that picked it up, they're all basically just redoing the press release.
Yeah.
Right?
Sometimes verbatim, sometimes rewritten a little bit.
But I've noticed like on FX Guide, for example, and it doesn't happen often, but I've seen it where, you know, Mike or you or whoever writes like a couple of paragraphs about why they think this is important and then have a link to the press release because that puts it back in the voice of that website and also makes you realize they're just not republishing a press release.
I used to like the way FX Guide did that because it was voice of the industry.
Right.
That's the whole point of that site.
Right.
Most sites can't do that, I think, because they don't necessarily have the background that the FX Guide has had.
Yeah.
Right. Or, you know, in other examples, The example in visual effects is there are sites that just run them verbatim.
Right.
And I actually don't think anyone reads that. I just think it's a way of appeasing companies that give them information. They're possibly advertisers.
Right.
I'm not saying it's some big conspiracy.
Right.
I'm just saying it's a little bit factory-like. And that's why I'm coming back to FX Guide and other sites that do put a spin on them.
Right.
I actually think the fact that they even bothered to do that will make readers more interested in reading it, as well as the insight that's offered.
Right.
But it's part of that, not just scrolling through it. Mm-hmm. You're actually going to get something out of it.
And I feel so much more interested about that because it honestly, as someone, you know, we put out press releases about stuff.
Yeah.
And if I see that in FX Guide, I feel like, oh, you actually read it. Because I feel sometimes when I see someone that just publishes a press release from us and it's just on there verbatim, which is, it's fine. There's no reason because people will read it. That's great. But I feel like they didn't even read it, you know, because it's almost like I would love a reaction from them. Listen, and press releases are huge. Like one of our competitors, like the best product they make is a press release. Because they just put out press releases with crazy ass stuff in it that gets everyone's attention, most of which is things that they're possibly going to be doing, right? And it's not, so therefore I'm saying it's not like this is a product we actually have. No, this is a product we're thinking about doing. And they make a press release of things they're thinking about doing. And it sounds insane. And the problem is most people are saying, oh, this is something they have. No, they're thinking they're talking about doing.
Yeah.
But I think it's the craziness of it, right? Like we're doing this crazy thing, right?
I'm with you. And press releases are so problematic because they're press releases. They're trying to sell something.
Right.
I think in animation and visual effects and filmmaking, they're even more problematic because I think it's hard to work out who you're selling to.
Right.
Meaning there's clearly going to be people buying rendering licenses.
Sure.
Studios buying rendering licenses. But sometimes there's just the casual interested observer, you know, a user maybe.
Right.
And so the press release isn't really, you know, like click on this to buy it.
Right.
It's more just an awareness of the product.
Right.
And here's the other thing, and part of it is again a problematic thing, is sometimes the people writing the press release aren't necessarily technical people.
Right.
Right? So they sometimes write them in more flowery, press releasey marketing speak.
Right.
Whereas actually the intended audience is a technical audience,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think sometimes there's a bit of a mismatch there. This is really more related to actual visual effects animation stuff,
sure.
I think. And again, that's why sites like FX Guide were good because it filtered the noise a bit.
Right.
You know, I'm not dissing people who write press releases generally. It's just
Like I said, there's good press releases and there are bad press releases.
Yeah.
And there's press releases that are very successful. And I think the other thing, you mentioned it before, is having a quote from a famous person, right?
Yeah.
In there is always going to be an important part because that's something that the search engine optimization is going to click onto, right?
Absolutely. It's a few years ago now, but when many camera companies were releasing digital cameras,
mm-hmm.
there almost seemed to be a battle of the which celebrity director or camera person or whoever would support that camera.
Right.
And that was the story instead of the actual camera.
Right.
Which makes sense in a way because sometimes directors or whoever or film studios choose a camera not necessarily based on the tech, but on what films have been made before, the feeling of it, you know.
Sure.
And I haven't seen it as much lately as these celebrity directors endorsing cameras in particular.
Right,
but I noticed it particularly for a while, and I'm sure it was all about, well, we won't get a headline unless this person, you know, supports it.
So when you go to SIGGRAPH or THU, but SIGGRAPH is a better example. I'm going to talk about SIGGRAPH for a second. There's not a lot of press releases at THU, right?
No.
No, because THU is THU is a place where we're talking about individuals and being inspired by creativity. But if you go to SIGGRAPH, there's a ton of press releases, right?
There are.
Is that, do you attend as many talks or do you look at mostly press releases?
So that's a great question because I barely look at the press releases.
Okay.
Related to SIGGRAPH. And the reason is...
But I think you're unique in that sense, right? Because people are going to say, I'm going to write an article about SIGGRAPH. And so therefore, I can just thumb through all these press releases and just pick them out.
They probably are. I mean, I probably am.
Right.
That's true. But the reason why I'm answering that so definitively is because in the old days... Mm-hmm. Only 5 years ago,
right?
The product announcements were actually made in a SIGGRAPH session, you know, right. or in a press release, but at SIGGRAPH. Now, that hardly happens at all. Okay. You know, I mean, there's lots of reasons for that. The same thing happened at NAB and IBC, I think, that you used to have these big announcements at these shows.
Right.
And then there were often... I think the companies realize they don't need to tie it in with NAB or SIGGRAPH. They can get as much traction any other time of the year.
Right.
You know? And what if they missed the deadline for announcing it at SIGGRAPH? Did that ruin everything for the next couple of months? So
right.
They used to not worry about that so much. So I've actually seen a change in the types of press releases that are at SIGGRAPH.
Right.
And I think sometimes they're almost non-announcements.
Right.
And... Again, I sound like I'm being critical of the press releases in particular, but it turns out if you go to SIGGRAPH or a conference and just talk to the people who are representing the company there, mm-hmm. you usually get much better information.
Sure.
So that's what I do. Go to the booths, try and catch up with old friends who I've talked to forever anyway.
Right.
And you're usually going to get a better story that way, I think,
okay.
than something they've devised via a press release. But you're right, that's my experience, and I'm not necessarily writing for any sites, and even FX Guide didn't really necessarily just post SIGGRAPH news verbatim.
Right.
Now, having said that, things come out, important announcements do come out just before SIGGRAPH, and if they're interesting, they'll get taken up.
Right.
But I hope that makes sense. I'm saying I feel like there's a different way that things are announced around these conferences than they used to
be. I actually think Apple did that a little bit in some ways because, you know, people did used to go to tech conferences or whatever and talk about those things. But Apple said, screw that. We're going to make our own event.
Yeah.
And we decide when we want it to be.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And so they made their Apple announcements and they say, you know, get ready for something special or whatever the hell it is. And they're not going to do it at, you know, the CES thing, right?
Yes.
They don't go to CES and announce products. But you go to CES now, there's still like all, you know, Samsung's big announcement day or whatever. But now Samsung puts out their phone when the hell they're ready to do it.
Yeah.
And they have their own event and have their own thing.
Yeah. Right? And doesn't Microsoft have its own event as well? And obviously, you're right.
So I think that that's also... happening, but I don't know. I find it very interesting because it's what are the things that, and I know it's basically clickbait in a sense that I'm saying, but what are the things that get people to do things? And so what we've established so far is come up with something interesting in your title, but don't necessarily give everything away.
Yeah.
Right. So that people have an idea of something that's going to happen in this article or in whatever you're discussing. And go from there. Then the other one is if you're writing again, write something like the best, like the coolest thing. Just give a taste of what the coolest thing is in the first paragraph, right?
Yeah.
But then also, I think the ultimate thing is to get relationships with people, right?
Well,
it sounds like that's the most important thing to you, at least.
It is. Of course, it doesn't make sense if you're a new company or a new journalist because you've got to create those.
Right.
But to me, that's what helps work out whether the story is interesting in the first place because you can ask more direct questions.
Sure.
They know you, you know them. It really has helped, you know, in recent things.
Sure.
I give you an example of something else I think we could add to this list of what makes a good story, especially in the nature of press releases and announcements from software companies or whatever. And it is, can the publication run something, if they're not just running the press release, can they run something that's a bit different?
Okay.
Now, that is so hard to do. Your announcement is your announcement is your announcement, right? A new library of textures or whatever it is. The best sites, the best journalists will find a different angle.
Right.
And I actually think the FX Guide guys always had a good way of coming up with something different.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
But, you know, it's really tricky with films.
Sure.
When you're covering a film and you're covering the work of a VFX studio, I run into the problem sometimes when I might not have been able to do an interview straight away, but I still want to cover the film and I do a quick bit of research. And there's already been an interview with this person, and it really is the same things I wanted to cover. And, you know, you can't take it too many other places, you know. And then clearly somewhere like Cinefex is covering it all. But, you know, you think of them in a different light. So I do anyway.
You know, but, you know, I hate to say it. I get Cinefex, right? We get Cinefex.
Yeah.
And it's very exciting when it arrives.
Yeah.
Rarely do I read the full thing because it's so much.
It's so much. It's a very different way of covering the work. It's almost A to B. They mention many people by name.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for the artist, that's so fantastic. I think of it as the, and they even describe themselves, I think, as the periodical of record, you know, the journal of record, which is actually great. That's where it should be. For the other articles and things out there, I think one of the important things in whether you even run a story, whether it's on a film, software, hardware, it's whether the editor will want to run that story if they feel like they can do it in a slightly different angle.
Sure.
So I think people giving out press releases and story ideas to journalists should always think about different angles. And I even mean one angle for this publication and a different angle for the other one. And I don't mean play them off against each other.
Okay.
But it really helps in deciding whether or not you're going to run anything at all.
Right.
If there is a point of difference.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think, I don't know. For my audience, really what I want to do is I want to see like what they can do to try to, if they're going to do a short film or they're going to do some pictures, or they want to promote themselves as an artist, what is it that they can do to make those things work, right? Because a really beautiful image works, but something has to be different about it, right?
It does. It's impossible to be that different all the time, depending on what we're talking about. And, you know, there's another thing about this, which I think is interesting, is if it's good, people will look at it. People will read it. People will absorb it. Watch the video.
But also, you know, I look at Facebook or whatever on my phone.
Yes.
And that I'd say most of the time I'm looking at it on my phone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that is a big implication of like, is your image going to look good on your phone, or the video going to work on your phone or whatever it is,
right? Yeah, true. Because it's on your phone, should it be abridged, the video, for example, or should you just have a small section of the article, you know, not everything there because of the time demands and the bandwidth demands of mobile? I'm not sure about that. It's really changing in that people probably, like yourself, only look at your mobile and not your desktop computer.
Right. And if you're going to make a video or if you're going to do a short of some kind, make a teaser, right? Make a 1 minute thing.
I think so. I mean, people do share videos all the time, and if it's more than 3 minutes, people won't watch it, you know.
That's amazing.
And if you make a teaser that's 10 seconds, it probably will be shareable, but also you're hoping they click further for something else.
Right.
Depends what it is. I mean, people like trailers.
Sure.
Film trailers. But, you know, they're marketing tools, aren't they, obviously? And they're their art directed to death, and has everyone got time to do that sort of thing?
Right.
It's fascinating talking to you about it right now because it's bringing back all the memories about what made good content on FX Guide, what makes good content now. Mm-hmm. Long stuff I love making and writing because I feel like you get the most chance to find out more about the project. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, we were talking yesterday, the other day, about long podcasts mm-hmm. with actors and filmmakers.
Right.
I mean, of course they're better, in my opinion, than the 30-second sound bites.
Right.
But you have to seek it out. And you have to allocate the time to listen to it.
Right.
And we were talking about what you do it driving or on the train. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, it was like when the story, just so people know, my neighbor or my old neighbor was Wayne Knight, who, if you don't know who that is, he was Newman on Seinfeld. And also he was the computer hacker guy on Jurassic Park, but he was on the Nerdist, right? And I said, "Hey, Wayne, I heard you on the Nerdist," and he was saying, "Yeah," and he was saying, "You know, this whole podcast thing is fascinating because he said I told my entire life story in an hour because I was given that opportunity, and it just came up when he kept asking me and asking me and asking me. Yeah. He says there was hardly anything left to say." But I think people got an insight into me way more than me appearing on The Tonight Show, right? Yeah. Where Tonight Show, you're like 3 minutes and like, tell us about the project.
Yeah.
And the thing that they also laugh about on The Nerdist, you know, there was a Tom Hanks thing that they did when they were saying what he was talking about, what it's like to do a press junket, right? So a press junket is basically like a video press release.
It totally is. And it's 2 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, that's all they get allocated.
Right.
So,
yeah, it's really kind of interesting to sort of see that. And I'm just trying to find a way to encourage people to go a little longer, do a little more stuff. I mean, and it happens, you know, Mike's FX Guide article he does on rendering, right? It's so long.
They're 10,000, 20,000 word pieces.
Right.
That it's clearly intended for an audience who are in the industry.
Right.
But you'll actually find, I think, a lot of outsiders who are a little bit interested in RenderMan or V-Ray or whatever, you know, they'll also look at certain sections of them.
Mm-hmm.
We used to find, you know, I used to love the longer FX Guide TV interviews too, 40 minutes, 30 minutes, because of the same reason as you're saying with Wayne. But also, FX Guide has had a lot of success with the 3-minute Wired pieces.
Right. You
know, we're talking about different audiences. That's part of the thing too.
Yeah,
right?
You're right. But I think that's an excellent thing, the Wired thing, right? So one thing that I just truly am thankful to Mike is his Wired thing, because when movies get covered in the popular press or special effects or CG or FX or whatever it is, it always is the same thing. The wizards at ILM recreated blah. And then it's I don't think anyone's reading them anymore. One, because VFX or CG has a bad connotation now, right? And there's actually way more popular articles out there talking about why CG is bad and practical is good, which is a horrible thing because they're wrong. And it's not necessarily that one is better or worse. They serve different purposes. But Mike's going on the Wired is like the best combination of bringing awareness of something cool and sounding like he knows what the fuck he's talking about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he knows what he's talking about. And he's like, you know, it's like, I want Mike to come over to my mom and explain to her why this is cool, right? Because I can't, and he's doing that, and he's found the right voice to do that.
I absolutely agree, and I kind of hark back to the good featurettes that used to be on Blu-rays or on DVDs.
Right.
Now, I think those featurettes are less common, partly because there's not as much money in DVDs,
right,
but also because they're intended for a very broad, you know, audience, and don't make it too complicated. You know, Wired pieces sometimes aren't complicated because you've only got 3 minutes.
Right.
But generally the idea is to show pretty pictures.
Sure.
get some kind of great hook, one thing to talk about, one sure. main thing. And, you know, it's pretty much the same philosophy as a good written article. If it's interesting, people will look at it
right.
and look at the numbers on those wide pieces. The most interesting ones are the most hits.
Right.
Right? Video is fascinating to me because it's almost not about the time, even though I keep saying 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's about attention spans, and it's about also production time. Those mm-hmm. videos take forever to make. Seriously.
Yeah.
Not forever. They're just more complicated, I think, than people realize.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look around the web, there's some really, really great videos being made because then everyone can do them now on Premiere and Final Cut
mm-hmm.
themselves. But I think what's interesting about video is that the same things that apply to old school journalism and now writing still apply to video. How do you keep someone interested for 3 minutes?
Right.
How do you keep someone interested for longer?
Yeah.
And I mean, we're going around a bit here because I know we've talked about it already.
Right.
But I'd love to see the stats on these videos, how long they get watched for.
Yeah.
You know, I'm.
Do they go to the end?
Yeah. Do they go to the end? You know, well, does it matter?
And you know, like for example, it's interesting. And it's about production value too.
Yeah.
Because like you said, we were going to The Verge, right? And they'll do a review of the phone or a new TiVo yeah. or whatever. They do super high production
value. Super high.
So super it's like high. They do beautiful product shots. They mention it, they edit it, they go to a location. Yeah. To actually check it out. They give you a real and it feels authentic when the person's actually saying why this product is great or why this product is not so great. You believe that person, right?
I agree.
And you also know that journalist. Like I know Dieter Bohn is. Yeah. I know who Vlad Savov is, yeah. right? I know these guys, and when they're talking on camera, I trust them, right?
Yeah. And production value to me is huge because if it's crummy, you quickly look away.
Right.
There are so many people attending SIGGRAPH and NAB and these conferences who make interviews and videos.
Right.
And the interviews are terrible. Look, I know they don't have budgets.
Sure.
And I know sound quality is hard. I mean, look at your equipment here just to do a podcast is quite elaborate,
right.
frankly, which is great.
It's not that elaborate. But it looks fancy.
But I think it can go over people's heads how much you need to invest
right.
to make it quite good.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? And I think it's interesting because some of the content they're making is interesting,
right.
but the way it's presented is a turnoff.
Right.
And it was clearly something that the FX Guide guys wanted to do whenever they did video or audio is have decent quality, right?
Yes. I'm going to give a hint here at something because I think I mentioned in probably like the first podcast of this thing, but when we were doing V-Ray IRL, the short, right? And we did that and we had to do something fun for it. And I talked to another guy, a friend of mine who does shorts as well. And works on set. He's a dolly grip.
Mm-hmm.
He's pulled the dollies for like Clint Eastwood and everything else. He's big, works on his biggest movies around, but he does his own shorts and stuff, right? And he knows what to do as a director. But he was telling me, it's like, listen, video is what everyone thinks is the most important thing, but it's not because audio is the most important thing.
I agree.
And so he says, if there are any dollars you have into a production, if you're going to do an interview or whatever, put it into sound. And that's the reason you were just mentioning this podcast, right? I get these cool, you know, Hell microphones and this mixing board that's, you know, really great and can separate out all the channels. And I mix it together and I've got the workflow down so that it really doesn't take me that much time to do it. But I think part of the reason people like my podcast is because I do them in person. I don't do them over Skype.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I do them in person. And you and I can act and interact with each other. We can read each other's expressions as we're talking. And it sounds good, right? And if it sounds good, then it sounds like a high-quality podcast, right? We can be talking about anything.
I absolutely agree. Occasionally, when I had to go and film something or record something, because I'm making an excuse here for previous work.
Sure.
Because I didn't necessarily have experience in the industry or in that work, I found it really, A, hard, B, stressful, mm-hmm. and C, if it didn't work, I had no solution.
Right.
Right? So I admire people like you and also where I used to work mm-hmm. for getting it right and knowing how important that stuff was. Big shout out to Jimmy Shen, for example.
Yeah.
Who used to show me the ropes and right. always just treated everything like it had to be perfect, you know,
right.
pretty much perfect.
Yeah.
And that's because
you can't fix bad sound. You can fix a bad yeah. picture. You can't fix bad sound.
That's true. But just understanding you have to actually be bothered to carry the gear around to do it
yep.
is actually the first step. Now, there's probably heaps of people doing cool stuff with their iPhone and road mics and other stuff.
Right.
But I've observed over the years, for good quality audio and visual content, you need a little bit more.
Right.
You know.
And it's not yeah. massively expensive.
No, I'm not saying it's no, film that's quality stuff. Or
no,
anything,
no, no, no. But, yeah, but yeah. You can do quite a lot with a couple hundred dollars of yeah. equipment. And so it is important.
Yeah.
And you don't you know, I mean, I was doing one. I was just looking at the construct stuff where I did this video with Kevin, where we were, and it was one of the first sort of behind the scenes of construct, and I didn't bring a microphone, so we recorded it off the mic that came right off on the 5D, which was terrible, mm. and then there was all the air conditioning sound, and I tried to filter it out, and it just his voice sounds terrible. Now it still works, but people are like. You know, and then we fixed it the next time around.
Right.
So, but yeah, you know, just you know, you were just talking about. Okay, so you go from Canon 5D with the internal microphone, terrible idea. Then you get a little Rode thing that goes on top. That helps a lot.
Yeah.
But then
yeah.
you say, okay, maybe we should have someone with a boom mic here.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing how radio mics just up your quality to as if you're doing a 60 minutes interview.
Right.
I'm not even. Being facetious or exaggerating, yeah. it basically is what they use.
Right.
Right. So yeah. If I had the time and the expertise to do more of that, I absolutely would. And I actually loved doing it when I was doing it.
Right.
And I always appreciated how much time it took.
Mm-hmm.
And not just, we're talking more than just sound, mm-hmm. the camera framing, understanding. Composition, even just in an interview setting,
sure,
super important.
Yeah, because you used to do that, right?
Yeah,
because well, I remember when the first time I met you, you were actually helping set up an interview with me and Mike at FX at FMX, right?
Absolutely. I'm never going to take credit for doing anything.
No,
of
but
it,
you but learned. You learned enough to
I
know.
Learned enough to know it's important to get it right.
Right.
And I think it's still a skill that I could do better.
Sure.
Which is. Fine, but I don't do much of it now. That's right. one of the differences.
Yeah. Well, at least you know the importance of it.
Yeah. But, you know, the point that I originally made was when you go and watch some of these videos that get done at conferences or even just anywhere, mm-hmm. you can tell they don't know the basics.
Right.
And it's a shame because usually the content is always, if you're talking to a good person,
right.
the content's good, but the execution of it isn't that great.
Right.
Which is a bit disappointing. And
sure.
I think... there's room for improvement in content creation there.
Right.
And, you know, as you say, people like The Verge and Vox and, gosh, any big site now, they're nailing it. They,
right.
You know, and the reason is because they're very nimble, these crews with Canon 5Ds and
right.
small mics and,
well, look at what's know. Happening right here at THU.
Oh,
I mean,
my gosh.
It's like, you know, at every opening of the last talk of the night, they do a video showing you what just happened that whole day. And it's an incredible high value video, right?
Yep.
It's about a minute or so. And it's like, it gets people so excited. It's like, oh my God, you know,
yep.
and Jeff Muddle sat next to me and he runs CG Architect. And he was saying, it's like, Jesus, the production value at THU is amazing.
The production value is amazing. They do just use Canon 5Ds and other cameras and
yeah.
the drone every now and then
right.
and great sound. But I am going to say
yeah.
there's a whole crew here and there's a whole three editing rooms.
Right.
So they do have the
no,
infrastructure
it's not
to make
cheap.
It.
It's not
yeah,
cheap.
Not cheap and it's takes time. But the point is, they're taking the time.
Right.
So they're,
and they're filming everything constantly.
Yeah.
So that's what I have so much content. It's great. So.
Yeah. So, yeah, the bottom line is I appreciate all that work.
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, it's true. It's true. And I think it's good to do that. And I think it's good to have some good stories. I think that's the thing that people want to do, right? They don't necessarily – the old school interview is if you have someone saying, talking about their product or whatever doesn't work, right? I think it's a story that people want. People want a story. They want to feel attached to something when they see it or get excited about it.
Yeah. Yes. A story that's almost relatable.
Okay.
One of the first things that I loved about visual effects journalism mm-hmm. was there often always was an interesting story to tell.
Okay.
No elements. We go out and shoot elements. How do we solve this problem?
Right.
That's an interesting story.
Sure.
On just about any visual effects project from Transformers to the smallest short film.
Right.
It really is because it's all about problem solving. And so whenever I write an article about a film or a visual effects project, I'm always almost doing it in a linear way.
Okay.
And if anyone thinks that's boring, they can. But you know that to me is the interesting part of it.
But okay, so you write your story in a linear way. I'm gonna relate what you're writing and video to the same way, and this is what I'm and tell me if this works as an analogy. But you're writing in a linear way, which allows people to continue to see the story and keep the progression.
Yep.
However, in order to continue to keep people's attentions, there's several things that go into an article. Pictures is one.
Yeah.
You break it up with pictures, so as you're scrolling down, you do things. Pull quotes.
Yeah.
You know, where you have one piece of nugget that's like, oh, I want to keep reading, you know, or whatever it is. So the equivalent to that in video, and this is something I learned when I was doing videos at Blur, is B-roll.
Oh, B-roll. Oh, my gosh.
It sounds like the most boring thing that you don't want to do. But trust me, if all your video is just two people talking, it's going to be boring. No one's going to watch it. But if you constantly have B-roll of the studio or of the product or of the this or the that, and my editor is always yelling at me because I don't have enough B-roll.
You're cracking me up because I'm pretty sure I got a reputation with Jimmy for annoying him about B-roll. Like we'll be out somewhere shooting and I said, oh, can you get it? Sort of that. And we might not have time. And that's the reason he might say no or have said no. But honestly, if you get it, you will use it.
Right.
You will use it back in the editing suite.
Right.
You just will. I'm obsessed with B-roll. Obsessed
it
with
needs,
B-roll.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've seen my video. Like one of the videos I was doing, there was not enough B-roll in it. And the editor was upset about it. He made me go back to the location and shoot another, 20, 30 minutes worth of B-roll. And he's saying, like, okay, no, just film a door. I mean, it's film a monitor, film a thing, do a time lapse. Time lapses are great as B-roll as well.
I can give you an example of where I failed with B-roll. We were making a video story about Happy Feet 2, made in Sydney at Dr. D Studios.
Right.
They had finished production, but they had this crazy warehouse in Sydney where they'd made the film and were doing motion capture there. Went there with a crew, small, really tiny crew, had a camera, probably had two cameras, didn't get any B-roll of the motion capture stage or the motion capture suits, which were sitting there.
Right.
The guy wasn't in a motion capture suit or anything, but that was there to shoot.
Right.
And didn't get any outside footage of the building, which was old and heritage listed, and didn't get any signage, didn't get almost any B-roll because we relied on the studio giving us animated footage, but they're just final shots.
Right.
So sure, we could cut the interview with the final shots. It ended up being great because my editor did a great job.
But yeah.
I remember from that day forth being really annoyed at myself for not even bothering to shoot something with a spare camera or even my iPhone. I'm still annoyed about it.
Yeah.
And I don't know why we didn't do it. It was this sort of, we don't really have time. But, I mean, I acknowledge you don't just shoot it and make it work. You have to light it. You have to make sure you're doing something interesting with it.
Right.
But anyway, that's always haunts me, that particular.
All right. Well, I'm going to say one last thing about the B-roll thing, and that's a hint. And you said your iPhone. We shot something in a studio, and basically our editor was with me. I said, just make sure that I'm not missing anything, or, you know, if you need B-roll, whatever. And he goes, all right. And so while things were going on, he took his iPhone and put on Hyperlapse. Remember Hyperlapse?
Yeah.
And we'd basically just walk down the hallway, and people were milling around. And so everyone was like, it was a time lapse, but it looked like a perfect dolly motion controlled shot. And it was so easy. And he did a bunch of those, and he threw them in B-roll, and they look, wow, look at this bustling studio.
I love it.
It's just so simple. Just things like that. You know, like, think of the tools you have and use it. And like, again, that iPhone quality was good enough to certainly make it into the video, you know?
Yeah. And absolutely, now it is. Yeah. In fact, it's sometimes better.
Yeah, that's right. That
just because Apple does some things with the lighting to make it look good.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. No, I'm with you.
Okay. Well, I unfortunately going to have to cut it up because Brenda Chapman's coming by to do the next one, and I really want to make sure I'm ready for her. Clean this place up a little bit. It was really cool talking to you. Did you like THU this year? Were you...
Oh, yeah, I really did.
And this is your second year, right?
Second year.
Yeah.
It's a great mix of visuals. It's not just visual effects, which is probably the best thing, right? It's animation, concept design, other design that I'd never heard of, and lots of inspirational stuff, which is pretty cool.
Cool. Yeah. Well, I definitely think I'm pretty sure Andre's not going to tell us he's not going to do it next year. I really hope so.
He's always got something to surprise us with.
Yeah, it's true. All right. Well, thanks so much, Ian. I appreciate it. And we should do this again.
Cool, man. Thanks, Chris.
All right. Bye.